Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of June, 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Matt Bennett from TGM out of Windsor, Illinois, will be here to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. He has some interesting things to talk about as it relates to wet regions of the Corn Belt, which he says is very large, and the impact on grain production. So stay with us right through the end of the half hour. And along the way, we'll take a look at the agricultural news, too, as we make our way through this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. Futures finished like this. The July corn today up a penny and three quarters at $4.42¾. September at $4.39, 3¼ higher. And December corn at $4.43¼, up 3¼ cents. March futures $4.54, up 3¼. The May at $4.61¼. Up 3¼ for the day, and July of next year at 467.5, 2¾ higher. July soybeans 1437, up 21¼. August at 1381¾, 20 cents higher. September beans at 1279¾, up 14¼. And November contract at 1244¼, up 15¼. January futures up 14¾ at $12.50¼ per bushel. Bean meal futures at $4.65.50 were up $13.80. Bean oil at $40.51, down 14 cents for the afternoon. The hard red winter wheat finished the nearby July at $7.21, up 7 cents. And the soft red July at $5.82¼, up 6¾ cents. Live cattle futures finished the August at $152.75, $2.10 higher. August feeders at $215, 12½ cents, up the $3 limit. And lean hogs for the day at $129.85, finished 55 cents higher in the July, up 15 cents in the August at $128.80 for the afternoon. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
In the outside markets at this hour, crude oil futures for the day are trading $105.63 a barrel. That's down 87 cents. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price down 0.8 of a cent to $3.08¼ of a cent. And ethanol futures at $2.12¼ of a cent, up a nickel for the day. The difference between the two is 96¾ of a cent wide. That's down 5⅛ from yesterday afternoon. Natural gas at $4.40, 15⅓ of a cent lower. Diesel fuel at $3, a penny and 3 cents, down a penny and 6 cents. And gold futures finished the day at $1,316.40 a troy ounce, down $5.80. The U.S. dollar down 0.005 at 80.22. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Isolated showers, a few thunderstorms. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies, a high of 85 degrees on a south-southeast wind at 6 to 8 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation this afternoon set at 30%. We are near that 85-degree mark at 84 outside the studios here in Urbana-Champaign. Tonight, scattered showers, some thunderstorms. Those will come before 1 a.m. Central Time, mostly cloudy and 66 degrees on an east wind. And chance of rainfall again at 30%, and then tomorrow a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1 in the afternoon. Partly sunny and a high near 85 on a south-southeast wind at 6 to 10. Friday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a low of 68. And Saturday, a 40% chance of rainfall, partly sunny otherwise, and a high of 86 degrees. South winds at 7 to 11 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 15. More on the weather forecast when we talk to Mike Tenora at the bottom of the half hour.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
It is the 26th day of June 2014. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line from Mandeville, Louisiana, at CGB Enterprises is Dan Zwicker. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Well, after your giddy-up this morning for the soybeans, they did manage to rally a little bit more and finished up at the July and the August contract, more than 20 cents. The November's up 15 and a quarter. Not bad for the day.
No, and basically what it was triggered by was the net increase in export sales for the current marketing year of about 11, 12 million. Overall sales now are up to 1371 or 1671, and USDA's currently has 1.6 traced out on their balance sheet. So now, those sales can be canceled and they can be rolled forward, but it's interesting that the sales keep coming for this current crop year at current prices, because they would have to pay a premium for these old crop beans versus the new crop beans. So it does tell you that there's a demand for U.S. old crop soybeans, and what that's going to do now is it's going to force the USDA to find 70 to 80 million bushels of extra beans around on the June 1st stocks report. Now, if something like that would occur, what that would mean would be that USDA's production estimate is understated. The average trade guess that the trade is kind of working going into the report here is 380 million. That roughly assumes about a 35 million bushel fine back of beans to work through the balance sheet. But it's going to be real interesting to see if USDA doesn't find any fine back bushels, and we've got a stocks number down around 345, 350, that would probably create an explosion in your July and August old crop contracts, may even be a big push to the September contract, because it would require a major rationing move of some kind, or very quick imports coming in from South America about as quickly. They probably would have to be, it have to be a record pace, or we would probably run out of beans. But the market would probably go ahead and ration out what it needs to do right away there, probably during the first week or two of July. So that is what gave the new crop or old crop beans a push here today. Technically, that did some pretty good work on the old crop bean charts. If you look at July and August futures, it did break above the downtrend line drawn off of the May high, and connected here to the high that we, you know, the highs that we had as we were going down. So it is a shift in trend anyway. And since we took out Monday's high point and actually closed above Monday's high point, you would technically call the short-term trend in soybeans now sideways to higher going into Monday's report.
Mm-hmm. Monday's report will be fun. The range from the trade is really wide. I mean, we're talking about 340, 380 million bushels on the midpoint, 380. But the range is 100 million bushel wide, a third. There's a 30% range in there. That's a huge range. I guess the trade.
Well,
is not
that right. All depends upon now in FOMA Economics, which is a well-respected consulting firm out of Memphis, Tennessee. Their reasoning, I think they're one of the high ones. I think they're looking for stocks to be somewhere around 420, and it's based upon the percent of use over a historical point of time. And what they believe, if that historical percentage is correct, then USJ will find back something like 70 or 75 million bushels. So that is one of the reasons why, and they've got good logic, good reasoning behind it. We'll see whether or not they're right or not. But, you know, you would think that after the first and second quarter that USJ would caught it, and they may not even catch it, and they may be right in the long run, but they may not catch it in the June report. Who knows what kind of number they're going to come up with. But I understand everybody's logic, and that's what's going to make the report probably as volatile of any report probably of the year, because if USA doesn't find any bushels, the shorts are going to have to deal with it and cover, and that would probably call for a locked-up move of the expandable dollar limit, and then that would probably expand to $1.50, so you could have a very violent move. Now, if the Infoma group and the higher-end numbers are correct, it would probably pull the plug on any old crop price strength for the remainder of the year, because it would imply that we have adequate inventories to get by until new crop harvest.
And so if we can lock limits on the bottom end of the trade range at the 340 million, do you lock limits if Informa is right and we're up at 440?
No, yeah, you'd probably go down. You'd probably go down the limit, Buck. That'd be my guess.
Don't stutter over that.
If the 420 numbers are right, the plug is going to be pulled out of the old crop bean market. I mean, very quickly, because it is carrying a premium to new crop, because of the supply tightness and this overbooking of export sales that everybody's still scratching their head over, how we're going to make that. Now, USA has plugged in 90 million bushels worth of imports. I question whether or not we can get 90 in. I think 70 to 75 is probably tops. And so we're going to have to cancel some of the 70 million oversale, and I don't know if we can cancel much more than half. I think half of the people that are on the books are going to stand for that commitment. They bought them and they want them, and it's up to then the commercial grain trade to get them loaded and get them sent to them. So it could be a quite interesting report day on Monday.
Hey, which of your positions, the bullish position on soybeans or the bullish position on corn, gets more of a excitement, maybe upset folks at you in the marketplace at this point?
Well, any kind of bullish talk creates a lot of hate tweets to me. I mean, the bear was frothing at his mouth here today. He was mad after I got done talking, and then the market continued to build on that strength they had early. So they were mad as the dickens. And, you know, everybody takes everything too serious, I think. I try to put a little humor into the markets. And but there's no doubt that, you know, under current environment, and all you can say is current environment. We don't know what 2 weeks environment is going to be like.
Right.
If we did know that, we could put on a position and make a whole ton of money and call it quits. By the way, I am going to go pick up my new fifth wheeler here this afternoon, so I'm getting ready to travel in the political circles in 2014 or 2016 around the world. So my wife's going to work for one candidate, and I'm going to work for the other candidate.
Hey, wait a second. I remember, when you go on vacation, doesn't the market go down? Isn't that what the old adage used to be?
Well, maybe not when I'm out politicking for a
presidential
candidate.
Oh, no. You don't get to adjust. When are you leaving again? Monday?
Well, I'm going to be up in Illinois a couple of weeks during the last 2 weeks of July. So maybe we'll have the high end. We'll be going down to zero by then, or at least he'll be wanting to the bear will be wanting to take it to zero anyway.
Yeah, he'll want to hand you your head, I guarantee it.
But no, they They don't like the idea that the corn market can rally. You can kind of see that everybody wants to be bearish corn. They want every reason in the world to sell corn. They got the farmers totally scared to death that this corn market is going to go sharply lower. I don't know. It all depends upon what kind of July weather we get, August weather. We got a long time to pollinate this crop, fill out the ear, and get it harvested. So there's still a long time to go yet. But they probably get madder when I talk bullish corn, or they probably think I'm totally nuts. Mm-hmm. And I'm just out here to kind of aggravate them at the moment. And I do a good job of it based upon the hate tweets.
Hey, say hello to Teresa when you get to Waco if you're going there this weekend.
I sure will.
All right, bye-bye yeah, now. That's
bye.
Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana. Joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's what's topping the agricultural news for the afternoon. The American Soybean Association's treasurer, Rich Wilkins, testified before the Senate Committee on Finance yesterday about the importance of biotechnology to soybean farmers as the U.S. pursues trade agreements abroad. Soybeans are the leading agricultural export for the United States, and Wilkins stressed the importance of the need for more consistent regulatory frameworks in partner nationships, especially China and the European Union. While other countries have adopted systems for biotech trade approvals, Wilkins says decisions are subject to differing regulations, overtly political, which can result in lengthy delays between approvals in importing and exporting countries. He says this is a concern because a trace amount of a trait detected in a cargo can result in its rejection and major losses for the shipper until an importer approves a new trait. This is the third time Wilkins has testified on international trade issues. Speaking of which, according to the Japan Times, Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations will resume July the 3rd through the 12th at in Ottawa. Chief negotiators will discuss remaining topics, including tariffs and intellectual property rights. President Barack Obama has said he hopes a TPP agreement will be reached before his trip to Asia in November. Now let's turn the clock back to 2013. The agricultural sector in that year grew by about 16.4%. That's just last year, which is the most it has grown in any single year since at least 1998. American Farm Bureau Federation Chief Economist Bob Young explains in this story from Shanika Otterby what this growth means.
Last year was one of the agriculture sector's better years, according to American Farm Bureau Chief Economist Bob Young. He says a number of things came together at the right time for agriculture.
We did have high prices coming off of the 2012 drought situations. We did have a good-sized crop, so we had a lot of product to sell at reasonably strong prices.
Despite this double-digit growth in 2013, Young says farmers should be cautious about how 2014 will turn out.
Almost every projection that I've seen for 2014 are for numbers to be off pretty markedly from where they were last year, that we could be down 20% from revenue levels of last year. Livestock sector, on the other hand, doing reasonably well, but just that drop in crop revenue, I think, is going to pull things down markedly for 2014 relative to 2013.
Young suggests farmers look for pricing opportunities when they present themselves.
We get any kind of a weather scare here as we move through the summer and prices pop, I'd certainly be ready to take advantage of those. Livestock side might want to price some feed here in the next few weeks or so as the market might begin to sag. Expectations are for a really good crop. On the other hand, the livestock prices are pretty good, so might want to think about that as well from the selling side.
Shanika Otterby, Washington.
Let's move from the agricultural sector to the energy sector, where it could be an energy game changer. The Commerce Department has given Irving, Texas-based Pioneer Natural Resources and Houston's Enterprise Products Partners the okay to sell ultra-light oil from Texas overseas. Energy economist Ed Moore says the U.S. is already allowed to send crude to Canada and Mexico.
You add all these bits and pieces up, and it comes to a million barrels a day. It's a kind of very big number, considering that 2 years ago we were exporting virtually no crude oil at all.
It would be the first export of unrefined U.S. oil since the Arab oil embargo of the 1970s. Limited exports could start in August and grow to some 700,000 barrels a day. And finally today, beef, it's what's for dinner. The beef, it's what's for dinner phrase is one of the most successful taglines ever, according to Jim Beaudreau, who was in charge of the campaign effort from 1998 to 2002. He says it resonates with everyone, whether they're in their 20s or 70s. Beaudreau says the Beef Checkoff wanted to own the dinner meal, and the tagline helped accomplish that. Research shows that almost every year, more than 8 of 10 consumers have at some point seen or heard the tagline, and about half can recite the beef industry tagline unaided, even though television advertising has not been done for a decade. Beef Checkoff Manager of Marketing, Advertising, and New Media, Martin Roth, says beef, it's what's for dinner, isn't just a tagline, it's the brand and the authority for all things beef. And that's the Ag News. Well, it's a glorious Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report here on Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's take time now to check the cash grain market. Matt Bennett is on the phone line. He's in Windsor, Illinois, and with TGM there, the grain elevator. Thanks, Matt, for taking the time with us this afternoon. You've traveled a bit over the last week or so. Were you flying or driving first? And if you were driving, what'd you see?
We were driving. You know, we weren't in major corn-producing states, but we saw a lot of corn and didn't see a bad field anywhere. So I think it's kind of reflective of what we're hearing about our crop going so far.
What do you think about the marketplace over the last week and the jump in the bean market today in particular?
Well, you know, with the bean market, obviously people are looking forward to the report, wondering if we're going to have, a little bit more of a cut in stocks. And, you know, to me, I think a move like this in front of the report with the bean market probably isn't all that surprising. I'm probably a little more focused with my clients on the new crop beans than I am the old crop, but we're just trying to position ahead of this report and get ready for any wild fluctuations we may have.
Will that all come in the grain stocks? I take it if you're talking about old crop, new crop, do you think there'd be much of a change in the acreage then?
Well, you know, to me, I would think that the way to go on the acreage on beans would be higher, but again, I could be surprised. I don't know if I always, obviously agree with everything the USDA comes up with, but, if you listen to Dr. Good Talk, they're always very close, so I don't want to get too hard on them. But my opinion on the matter is we should probably end up above the March intention, but, it's tough to say how much, but I'm going to say around 1 million acres.
So if we're up 1 million acres above the March intentions, that'll put us, what, at about 82.4, and that would be, average trade guess is 82.2, so you're not too much bigger than the rest of the crew.
Right, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was even higher yet, but I think some of the weather in the last 3 or 4 weeks has probably, made people wonder whether maybe we didn't lose a few bean acres as well, so I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens as we go through this report.
Do you feel like demand under the market for soybeans, old crop, and for corn, old crop, maybe new crop as well, is good, or is it lagging for the summer?
Well, I think demand's going to stay fairly strong. That wasn't anything to be excited about compared to last week, but I think bottom line is, the demand for corn and beans has been just phenomenal these last, 8 or 10 months, and I think it's something that we have to be very for, especially looking at a potentially record crop.
And quickly, your bids.
Yeah, we'd be 436 for cash corn, 415 for fall, 1441 for cash beans, and 1220 for fall.
Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
This is Illinois Public Media.
It's National Creamy Pralines Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1788, Thomas Blanchard was born. An American inventor, he created a machine for mass-producing tacks. And at age 13, he developed an apple-paring machine. In 1817, the first coffee was planted in Hawaii on the Kona coast. In 1839, Gustavus Franklin Swift was born. Swift was founder of the meat packing business Swift & Company, the inventor of the refrigerated railway car, and the first to ship dressed beef to eastern markets instead of live animals. Swift also pioneered products including glue, soap, and margarine out of cattle parts previously discarded. Swift & Company was worth $25 million at the time of his death in 1903. And in 2003, Richard Plow died, an American ecologist. He was the founding president of the Nature Conservancy, and he helped found the World Wildlife Fund. In 1945, he was one of the first to warn about the dangers of DDT-deficient birds. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for this market report comes from Country Financial, providing generations of Central Illinois farmers with crop hail insurance programs for individual producers, immediate family member, or tenant-landlord relationships. More information is available from your local Country Financial representative or at country-crop.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line is Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Mike, let's start with the wet weather that has been around in the northern and northwestern part of the Corn Belt for some time. It's been other places as well, which has made the start to the growing season really, really good. But there are places that have been flooded. What kinds of things do you see across the whole of the Corn Belt, and especially in the northern parts of Iowa, south central parts of Minnesota?
Well, the interesting thing is that unofficially right now, we are in the midst of the seventh wettest June since at least 1895 across the U.S. corn and soybean belt. That includes the major producing states such as Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, and then a few states that touch those as well. So right now we're at the number seven wettest since 1895. All we need is about one more inch of rain across the region through Sunday night, and we'll end up having the wettest June in at least 120 years. So this is very interesting in that there is a correlation between reduced yield potential and excessive rainfall early in the growing season. Now, the final yields on corn and soybeans will still be determined by not only what happens over the next 5 to 6 days, but more so later in July, August, and into September. So this is only one piece of a big puzzle, but we can say with confidence that it's been very wet across a large area, and it stays fairly wet over the next 5 days. If you look at what's happening up in the northern plains and into the northwest corn belt right now, we do have a couple of large systems that linger off to the west. They're starting to produce areas of rain and a few thunderstorms at the moment, and we'll see more of those as we go through the next several days. The best chance for heavy rainfall across Minnesota and Iowa, which includes some of the wettest areas of the corn and soybean belt, hold until Saturday and Sunday, then begin to diminish as we move into next week. Next week does look considerably better as far as rainfall and temperatures go, because we will see a cooler pattern, and it also doesn't look to be nearly as wet, with a favorable period of drying for at least the first 4 to 5 days of July, including the holiday next Friday. Once we get beyond there, it does warm up a bit, and that'll be something to monitor going forward into the middle of July. But at this point, it will be very difficult to develop a large-scale heat wave across the central U.S. There's a couple of reasons for that. The biggest one is that soil profiles are simply too wet at the moment. You have to have dry soils to really get a heat wave going, and that will not be the case for the next several weeks. On top of that, we can just see that the low-level wind flow is going to originate from the tropics as it flows into the central U.S. once we get into the second week of July. And because of that, we would have to forecast thunderstorms, And thunderstorms also cool the atmosphere on top of making it rain. So we just have fairly decent confidence in a seasonable to warm pattern for the second week of July, but with scattered thunderstorms, which is generally not too threatening of a forecast.
As always, very informative, Mike. Thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
You're welcome.
Mike Tenor is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. You have a great afternoon, too. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.